You're listening to Live Free, Think Free on 90.1 KPFT Houston, your home for uncensored news and underground music since 2011.
All right.
What up?
Live Free, Think Free. That's what's up. Hey, and we're in the same room.
We're back, but we are in the same room despite being on two different screens.
We can't disclose our location. We're in a green room of some type.
We're excited, guys. It's been I think it's been 2 months since we've done a show, and I'm in Houston. We're in Houston together right now doing the show, and it's a little, little different format this week because we're kind of catching up. There's older news that maybe we haven't got to in the last 4 or 5 weeks, and there's some new things, like literally brand new news. Like I just went to a protest recently at the Quds Day
with the Palestinian movement.
New news. So there's lots to get into, but I want to remind everybody, you can find us at thehoustonfreethinkers.com. That is the place for the archives of our show that we've been doing for over 10 years, I think 12 years now. And check it out. You can find out, you can find links to our Spotify, to any previous podcasts and shows we've done there. And of course, we're broadcasting on the Conscious Resistance Network, theconsciousresistance.com. We're also still partnered with KPFT, 90.1 KPFT in Houston, community radio, kpft.org.
The mighty 90.
So we're thankful to everybody over there who's doing their work, and we look forward to continuing to work together.
A new home.
Yep. They got a new studio. We're going to be coming there very soon to get involved. So, so we got lots to get into. And
so I know you were talking about the new news of the protest that you got into, went out and were a guest speaker.
Should we start there?
Yeah, I think it's Houston, and it happened just a moment ago, and yeah, it's hot. Let's get into it.
Okay, so yeah, today I was invited to participate, to speak as a guest at the International Quds Day protest, which for those who don't know, and I've just been learning, I'm not an expert, Quds Day has been happening since 1979. It is the last day of Ramadan, and the Palestinians use it as a day of celebration, but also of protest against Zionism and against Israeli policies towards the Palestinian people. And like I said, it's totally new to me, but I was grateful to be invited. You know, Houston has such a wide range of diverse communities that you don't always necessarily know about the different traditions and the cultures and the events taking place. So I was very grateful to be invited. It was a really powerful experience. And there was kids, there was families, there was parents, students gathered, expressing their voices, holding signs, comparing Zionism to Nazism and calling it out for its racism. There were a couple of counter protesters, but really, for the most part, a very peaceful gathering. And what we're about to play for you now is just some of the clips from two of the speeches that took place. These are from young local Palestinians here in Houston. So check this out.
We would like to take this time to highlight Shahid Ibrahim al-Nabulsi. Shahid Ibrahim al-Nabulsi was an 18-year-old Palestinian commander who was sent into martyrdom in August of 2022. Known as the Lion of Nablus, he was a key figure in strengthening the resistance on the West Bank. But it is difficult to explain how popular Ibrahim al-Nabulsi was and how many people wanted to be just like him, brave and heroes. The young commander became a national symbol for daring to show up unmasked to guarded funerals in defiance of the Israeli occupation forces every time they tried to kill him. As a child, he was known for his stance against unjust authorities, but his activism truly took a rise after his arrest in 2019. Ibrahim was just 15 years old when he was imprisoned and tortured by the settler forces. And this young
Syrians, you are not a minority in this city anymore. My name is Parvez Akhwan, and I'm running for United States Congress, and I'm running to represent American population in Houston.
Free Palestine!
It is the honor of my lifetime to do this. I will not let you down because we're not taking any money from the Israeli lobby. We're not taking any money from the Wall Street banks.
That those videos we were playing were from Quds Day, and what I was saying there is that, you know, it's just a good opportunity to get connected to another part of Houston's community that you had young and old from the Palestinian community speaking up and standing out in protest of Israel's treatment of their people, and a lot of really cool connections out there. I was just grateful to be invited and to participate. And I will be putting out in a couple days sort of a highlight video of the different talks and, you know, the footage and everything.
Nice. Yeah, I got a little bit of local stuff. I don't know if we how much to get into this, but it turns out that 18,000 cows were killed in an explosion here in Texas just recently this week. And 18,000 cows is, they say, 20% of the cattle slaughtered in America on any given day. But you know how we're talking about different food processing plants burning up and all this. So now this is something not a food processing plant, unless you consider milk food, because it was a dairy farm. And yeah, so 18,000.
How did that happen? How did that? I don't understand.
They say the fire spread quickly, but they said they don't really say much about how it started. A dairy worker rescued from inside the structure was taken to hospital. It was in critical but stable condition. There are no other human casualties, but they don't really say too much about it. It's mind-boggling. The mayor of Dimmitt said, "I don't think it's ever happened here before." And they've got a picture. The smoke's just tremendous. It was the biggest single incident death of cattle in the country since the Animal Welfare Institute began tracking barn and farm fires 10 years ago. that's enough to fill 26 football fields with cattle. To put it in perspective, if you've seen a football field, think of 26 of them full of full-grown cows.
I don't know if it's just that these things are getting reported on more, because I did have a couple of weeks ago somebody share with me about like the average train derailments that happen per year, because it just seems like there's been a lot of reporting lately.
Yeah,
like there's the East Palestine thing in Ohio thing. Then there was another like spill after that, even a spill of them transporting some of the waste away from Palestine. Then that train turned over. So it seems like, I don't know if they're just getting more attention. I'm not saying something's going on, but it is weird, because like the other one you mentioned, the food different food processing plants and stuff that have gone up in flames the last couple of years. Or the last year or so, and then this 18,000 cows blowing up.
They were a mix of Holstein and Jersey cows. Wow. And if you know much about cows, Jersey cows are some of the best dairy cows, which makes sense. It's a dairy, right? Each cow is valued at approximately $2,000. So, you know, go ahead and add some zeros behind that 18,000 and double it. And you're talking about $36 million or so, right? Yeah, it's a devastating loss to the people there. And, of course, Texas ranks fourth in milk production. So, you know, this will take a little hit. And nowhere did it say how it started, but I thought it was interesting. It's something that happened.
Wow.
Here local in Texas. So.
All right. Well, thanks for sharing that. That's a weird one. We'd love to hear your comments on that. I'm going to jump to another local one that I found. This is actually kind of breaking news the last couple of days here in Houston. But it's one of those stories that whether you live in Houston or not, you're probably going to be interested, especially if you're a person out there, whatever your political persuasion is, that cares about election integrity and is concerned about the state of elections in the United States, and maybe even doesn't have very much faith or trust in those.
That sounds like me.
Yeah. So if you fit in that category, which I think is a lot of people, then this story will probably apply to you. So this is going in Houston, for those who don't know, is in Harris County. And Harris County, this is a headline from ABC 13. Harris County sues Texas Attorney General to block ABC 13 from getting midterm election documents. Okay, that's interesting. Let's find out what this is about. Harris County has filed a lawsuit against the Texas Attorney General to fight ABC 13, local affiliate of ABC, from getting these documents related to the November midterm elections. And what the documents they're trying to get are specific information, planning documents, about what the Harris County officials were doing in the 2020 election, what steps they took or didn't take, basically to try to figure out why were there some polling locations that opened? Why did some run out of paper? Why, you know, there was all these inconsistencies.
So those are the things they don't want to reveal, not like our personal information. They're actually like just trying to hide what happened with the election.
Well, so what it's saying here is that Eyewitness News, ABC 13, has filed open records requests trying to get these documents, documents related to polling, why polling locations opened late, why they ran out of paper. Just they want to get their whole just emails and whatever's related, and probably see, is there a story here? What's going on? And now that they're trying to file for that, the county is suing, basically suing the Attorney General, using taxpayer money, of course, to try to stop this local media outlet from getting these court records. And now they have a quote here from an associate attorney, Kelsey Galbraith. She says, 99 times out of 100, the government agency turns the information over. Unfortunately, the 1% of the time, things like this happen. So again, the media outlets filed open records requests. It goes up to the attorney general. In the case of like Texas, they have the ability to block records, or the police. This has happened to me before. The HPD can say, we appeal to the attorney general to say you shouldn't allow these to be released. And they can side with them. And if you got a lawyer, then you can, you know, do the whole thing. Well, in this case, the attorney general is okay with getting the documents, but the county is suing the state to try to prevent this media outlet from getting it. And so this began 5 months ago when ABC 13 asked for midterm planning documents and communication between county leaders. The county asked the Texas Attorney General to decline the request, citing lawsuits the county faced during the election. Last month, the Attorney General ruled against the county, and this means that the county had 30 days to give up the documents, and that deadline has now passed, and they didn't do it. And instead, they filed a lawsuit with the Attorney General. And again, the Associate General Attorney General says, quote, they can ask a court in Travis County to look at all the documents in camera, basically in the judge's chamber, not publicly, and decide if the Attorney General got it right or wrong. And this means, according to some legal experts, that the records won't be released for months or even years if this goes forward.
Wow. And I keep hearing this word, the county, like it's a person, or like, who is the county? I get it's Harris County, but who is this?
Well, I think the top official would be Harris County Commissioner Court, right? Harris County Commissioner, Judge Lena Hidalgo.
Hmm.
And those are like the highest officials in the county.
Why would Lena Hidalgo not want us to know these things?
Yeah. And especially, I mean, even one of the mayoral candidates, now he's not a mayoral candidate. He stepped aside. Chris Hollins, who was the local Democratic Party chair, who is credited with coming up with the Harris County voting, like did some innovative things. He created drive-through voting or this or that.
Oh, they opened it up for more people.
But then apparently there was all these inconsistencies going on. So now kind of another added to this story, another outlet, Channel 11, which is CBS. So you got ABC 13 and CBS KHOU also has joined this lawsuit. Now they're saying they're trying to get answers by joining the lawsuit to get information regarding I said earlier the presidential election. This was the last Harris County election, November 2022. I would say we go back and look even further.
That's interesting
to see what happened before. But so this is just kind of picking up, saying that there's a lot of unanswered questions. And now KHOU Investigates has filed 8 public records requests with Harris County in October and November. The county appealed as before, and which ruled that they should be released. Now Harris County's filed a lawsuit, and so they're joining with ABC 13, and they're requesting, they're more specific. They're saying the requests include information about the complaints made to the election security hotline, call logs for the election judge and technician support lines, a list of election workers and assignments, activity logs for election technicians, information about paper ballot allocation, text messages and emails by Harris County election administrators, and records of write-in votes. And aside from the request, Harris County has also refused to release the remaining request for payroll records for county employees who worked the election. So they're really trying to keep a lot of information from coming out to the public. Not really sure why or what that's about, but we could speculate. There's clearly some information here that the county doesn't want out.
And that's what I'm wondering about. Like, I mean, I guess anybody would. Why? I mean, why are they spending so much effort and, and money and time to fight the people knowing what happened with this? It seems weird. It doesn't seem like we're talking about an issue of national security. It doesn't seem like we're talking about, people's personal information. It doesn't seem like we're talking about, the plans to protect the mayor. So
yeah,
it's kind of baffling. There's a lot of extra money and energy spent to just stop people from knowing what happens in their election process. And if people can't know in a democratic society what happens in the election process, how do they know? I mean, we're already on machines and all kinds of things. How do we know anything that's going on with the elections, especially once they hide from, the journalists, if you want to call them that, they hide from the journalists what's happening and make them have to sue and chase harder. They're hoping that there'll be another story or something. I don't know. But at the same time, I think the journalists know the minute they start kicking up and preventing stuff, there must be something worth reporting.
Yeah, I think there's definitely something there, and there's something that the county doesn't want out. And typically they don't resist in this case, especially like it was saying in that situation, that less than 1% of the cases of like when the attorney general says, hey, this needs to come out, less than 1% of the cases end up in lawsuits like that. So definitely not a typical thing.
I would like to know what happens to the 1% of cases that do end up in lawsuits, the outcome, if in the lawsuits, foul play, whatever you want to call it, you know, bad actors are revealed in those 1%. You know, yeah. I mean, nobody, I'm sure there's lots of things people would rather people not look at or dig into.
Well, and this is just like this comment here we got from Kurt saying, I've had serious doubts about all elections ever since they went away from paper ballots. And in fact, some countries like Colombia and others still do paper ballots. And I was going to say that as we wrapped up that story is this is one of the reasons people don't trust elections. And I mean, there's a number of reasons, Diebold voting machines that we've seen can be hacked. That was years ago. I mean, decade ago, at least. But there's just so many different things. And you have this lawsuit and this attempt to not have transparency.
And this is just
this is one county in Texas out of the entire country. How many other places are there? Maybe things going on where people don't have the resources to file, you know, maybe there's no media filing.
Yeah. One media station in the small community, you know?
So it's very interesting. Let's do a quick music break. I know you got a new song, Mike.
But there was this one I'd like to talk about real quick, just because it's a local one. And it does seem like it's something people ought to be aware of. It comes from the Daily Mail, but it turns out that scammers cloned a voice of a Houston man with AI and conned his parents out of $5,000 by claiming he'd been in a car accident. The mom was forced to postpone cancer treatment as a result. I mean, this is something kind of, you know, we speak against looters and authoritarians, and anybody that's going to do this is pretty much acting like that. They're trying to force someone to do something with a deception, right? They're trying to manipulate through deception. But that's something to think about, you know, that they can fake your voice with AI. Houston-based Fred and Kathy did not provide their last names. I don't blame them.
They're probably scared now.
They basically got a call that said that their son, told them about a fake car crash with a pregnant woman and their son being badly injured. This is a serious situation. He hit a lady that was 6 months pregnant, Kathy said. She was told it was going to be a high profile case, and she did lose the baby. The thieves told the parents they needed $15,000 to bail their son out of prison. And they took the situation so seriously that Kathy had to push back chemotherapy for her cancer. Fred and Kathy said they are now telling their story in the hopes they might prevent someone else from finding themselves in a similar and growingly common, this story says, situation. They said the ordeal began last Wednesday when their phone rang, and upon picking it up, they heard an alarmed voice of their own son. The father said the person on the other end of the phone told him he had been in a bad car accident and that he'd hurt another person. The couple were immediately convinced it was their own child in need of help. I could have sworn it was talking to my son. We had a conversation. Authorities, however, said it was most likely artificial intelligence that spoofed their son's voice. Scammer told the frightened mother and father that their son was in the county jail and was going to be charged with DWI. The person said their son had sustained bad injuries and a broken nose. Still believing her child to be in danger, she did not hesitate. You're messing with my kids. I'll do anything for my kids. And they were told $15,000 was what they needed. And it wasn't until after the money had already been handed over that they realized they'd been tricked. The couple's son had been at work the whole time.
Yeah, I remember seeing this one when it came out a couple of weeks back or whenever it was. And this is just, I mean, I think it's a good example because we've been covering AI, and I wrote about this in my book a couple of years ago where there was, you know, lawyers and all kinds of really intelligent people warning that we should have a moratorium on things like facial recognition and AI. And even people like Elon Musk, who I'm not the biggest fan of, have brought this up. But I just posed the question to the audience, do you think AI will be a net benefit or a harm for humanity in the coming decades? Because, you know, this is just a taste of what's possible.
They don't need much info. Yeah. They can grab it from Facebook or from videos that
just
are
clips
public.
Of you.
It doesn't even have to be something you put out. It could be something someone else put out, you know, and tagged you in.
There's some videos going viral, like on TikTok. where people, like, they've taken Obama's voice, Biden's voice, Trump, and a couple others. And they've put together these AI-generated conversations between each of them and just saying crazy stuff. But it sounds very real. I mean, it's not perfect. But you could imagine a parent who maybe is older being fooled by something like this if it's pretty close, you know?
Yeah, so. There was one of Joe Rogan that wasn't Joe Rogan himself, but it was, you know, one of these deepfake videos promoting a libido booster. But it wasn't him. They said it was eerily real, though.
Very
so I
crazy.
Think what this might end up doing is if it becomes prolific, is it could basically get to where humans put no more faith and no more trust in the sound of a voice being a person.
Yeah,
that's kind of weird.
I did a video years ago called Video and Audio Fakery is Already Here. And this was 2016, 2017. That was the early points of it. But now, yeah, very easily just from pictures of us on the internet and our voice and recordings and even just a couple of seconds of video that people can pretty creatively stitch some things together. And it's going to be pretty dangerous when not only things like this, where people can impersonate you and call your loved one or your friends and say, hey, man, I know I haven't talked to you, but I need some help and this and that. Or maybe even a video that looks realistically like you. And then what happens when they do that in terms of like celebrities, right? There's videos going viral that it's very hard to distinguish. Is that a real person? Or even one thing I've thought of is, what about when the government, something real comes out and the government claims it's a deep fake? It's not real, right? Like, yeah. That's not us. That's not actually a thing I said or that I did. That was just one of those deep fakes out there. So I feel like there's some really weird doors opening up that we're going into. But yeah, let's go to song, guys. Wherever you're listening to, we appreciate everybody on Odyssey, Rockfin, Facebook, YouTube, and of course KPFT, and everybody who will listen to this later on Spotify and BitChute and everywhere else. We appreciate you. Let us know in the comments or wherever you're listening to us. What do you think about AI, things like ChatGPT? We'll talk more about that when we get back. I'm sure we both got some thoughts, but we're going to go to a brand new song from Ganesha. Tell us all about this.
Oh, man, I just went out to the release party for this, so I actually can talk about this. They performed. Ganesha is well known. They're probably a regional band or dang near one at this point. They performed all over Houston. They're a basic hard rock band, maybe indie hard rock. I don't know. But yeah, this is a new song. It was released, or it was recorded over at King Benny during the COVID time, and they've got a few other songs in the can. But they had a great turnout. It's a song called Cages. I think if you think about the words, they may be a little hard to hear at the beginning, but you can find it out anywhere. It was written during the COVID lockdowns, or what, you know. Luckily here in Houston, we didn't have them too bad. It's called Cages. Here it is. Maybe make your own. You know, it's art. Take what you can from it.
We'll be right back.
Yeah.
All right. Welcome back.
We're back. Good cages. So we got more stuff to get into. We're about halfway through the show. We're going to get into a little bit about detectors on Seattle buses and some Senate votes.
And I got a fluoride story as well. I'll jump into that one first. This is for those who've been maybe keeping up with my work outside of Live Free, Think Free. You've heard me, and even on this show, we've covered this fluoride trial, fluoride lawsuit that started back in, well, it's been a long road. It started in 2016. Michael, you heard of this law. It was passed in 2016. It's called the Toxic Substance Control Act. And it's basically part of the EPA. And it says that if that citizens, that's, I don't know if that's the way I identify, but that's supposed to be us. And if we believe that there is a toxic substance, we can petition the EPA to review said substance. And if they find evidence that that substance is toxic, then it's supposed to be banned, regulated, something.
Oh, like.
So it was, water. Which, I mean, I thought that's what they were supposed to be doing already, but that apparently passed in 2016, 2017. Either way, the Fluoride Action Network, who have been longtime opponents and, you know, kind of combating water fluoridation, have taken the approach of, they took the approach in 2016, 2017, filing a petition with the EPA under the TSCA, Toxic Substance Control Act, the way the law is written, saying, hey, here's these evidence of fluoride showing to be toxic and causing harm in these different ways. Please review this petition. They did. The EPA denied the petition. The Fluoride Action Network countersued and back and forth. And finally, after 4 years in 2020, summer 2020, it went to trial. There was like a week or 2 weeks of hearings that I reported on back then. And ultimately, it got put on hold because the judge, this is the first time in a federal court that evidence from scientists being presented showing the harm caused by water fluoridation, particularly focused on IQ and neurological development, after a number of studies have found that since 2006. And so the judge, though, put everything on hold in August 2020 because there was a report coming from the National Toxicology Program, an agency within the U.S. government, that was doing what they call a monograph, which is like a review of all the best high-quality studies. They look for low-bias, high-quality, I can't remember the exact wording, but, you know, very well-done studies. And the judge said, okay, that review's going on. Let's wait. It shouldn't be too much longer. Well, fast forward to late 2022 and nothing happened. The document never came out, even though it had been expected to several times. And then just to kind of get everybody caught up to what the latest thing is, which is basically in late fall 2022, things started moving again because the Fluoride Action Network attorney, Michael Conant, who's actually a pretty great attorney from what I've seen in court, his team filed open records requests to try to get whatever information they could from the CDC, from the HHS, to try to find out why is this NTP report not out? It's been 2 years. And guess what? They got emails showing, and I've said this on previous episodes, I believe. It's been a couple months, but I'm pretty sure I've said this before, that the CDC and HHS, particularly they named Assistant Secretary of Health Rachel Levine as having blocked the release of this report. These emails specifically have officials within the NTP saying our study's done, it's ready for release. They were going to release it May 2022, and then for some reason it never came out. Then they said in September 2022 they thought it was ready for release. They literally said, yep, we're going to upload it to our list server, it's going to get posted. And then in separate emails you see the CDC officials saying this can't come out, we're sure this is not going to come out. And so this came out through the court and you were like, wow, this should be a big revelation. Said didn't make any mainstream media. And needless to say, it's been kind of dragging on. Well, just this past week, there was another hearing, and I covered this. This was the latest hearing, and the judge actually set a trial date for the second phase of this trial. Like I mentioned, there had been some action in 2020. The original petition was filed in 2016. Now it's getting delayed till January 29, 2024. And this is about as good news as it can get because there will be a second phase. And now, even though that report the judge wanted to wait on, the NTP monograph of fluoride toxicity has not still been officially released. The NTP did release it on their website. They were basically forced, their directors and the CDC were forced to release it because of this lawsuit in its draft version. So it's not technically the government's opinion, but they're like, here's this May 2022 and September 2022 draft. And both drafts say, here's the wording, that quote, higher fluoride exposure is consistently associated with lower IQ in children. This is a report that was blocked by numerous officials.
You think that could have an effect on adults? Think about it. If you were a child with a lower IQ and you couldn't absorb all the facts of life that you need to learn as a kid to survive and not just be a docile sheep, mm-hmm. then by the time you're an adult and you're still drinking it, or if you get off it, it might be too late. Because it's not just like the effects of like your intelligence in that moment.
No.
In that moment, you're learning things that will matter for your psychology later.
Well, and also, like a lot of toxins, the way fluoride works is it's a cumulative effect. So it does build up in your body, right? So you're in the utero, your mom's pregnant, drinking fluoridated water. And then you're born and she's doing fluoridated powder formula. And then you grow up drinking tap water.
It says
with added fluoride for the babies. Yeah. So, I mean, think about all those different exposures. And this is what the scientists have said. No, here's another.
What about your bath? You know, you're sitting there.
All the sources of
hot water, all going
pharmaceuticals,
in your skin.
Processed food, canned goods. If it doesn't say specifically it's using filtered reverse osmosis water in those cans, it's typically fluoridated water. So like I said, that quote, higher fluoride exposure is consistently associated with lower IQ in children. That's not Derek Rose's opinion or the opinion of the show. That is from the scientists at the U.S. National Toxicology Program from their May 2022 report, which was only released through this lawsuit after they were forced to. Now, there's another study that was done. It's called a meta-analysis from July 2022. Full title, Association Between Fluoride Exposure and Children's Intelligence, a Systematic Review and Meta-Analysis. It said, quote, this meta-analysis confirms the results of previous meta-analyses and extends them by including newer, more precise studies with individual level exposure measures. The consistency of the data supports an inverse association between fluoride exposure and children's IQ. And so we have now plenty of documents, and this is what the attorney was arguing, saying, Judge, I think you have now the whole breadth of the evidence out there to make a decision. So they're going to return in January 2024, January 29th, so late January of next year.
Can you imagine if they resisted DDT this much?
Well, I mean, they've been fighting this pretty hard. I know there was probably some pushback. People are probably claiming DDT was safe in the beginning.
I think there were ads.
We might be at a point where this is really going to break. Like it could be finally at a point where the public accepts, because I'm sure there are people who are even hearing this on different audiences and the different channels and places we broadcast who might be like, oh, come on, Derek. We all know, I've been told since I was a kid, fluoride's good for me and it's going to, you know, take care of my cavities. And the scientists, the science, the data, you know, which we're supposed to follow that science, trust the science, doesn't show that. It doesn't show that, actually. Send that to me. I'll put that up. Yeah. So this is just, I encourage anybody who is not familiar with this, you can check out my articles on the lastamericanvagabond.com. I don't think we've said this yet, but all the articles will be linked at our website, thehoustonfreethinkers.com. So if you want to see any of the stories we've covered, including this fluoride one, go ahead and check it out. Because I've done dozens of articles over the last 2 years on this topic, and there's a lot. I mean, I really do wish that this was being reported in the bigger press, because this story deserves to get out. And one thing I'll say is, like I mentioned, that these emails show, here's the quote from the email, from these officials at the CDC, says, quote, the latest we heard yesterday is that Assistant Secretary of Health Levine has put the report on hold until further notice. This is after the scientists at the NTP say several times, this report is ready. We're ready for it to be published. And so Michael Connett, the attorney, he's telling the judge that he plans to depose an official from the CDC, someone from the Assistant Secretary of Health office, and the NTP director, this man named Dr. Richard Wojciech. And he said his goal is to, quote, understand why that report, which was considered complete and final by the NTP scientists, was not allowed to be published. And it's interesting because then the judge kind of pushed back. This was at the Zoom hearing the other day. I was listening to it and put this article together after it. The judge said, quote, whether there is goodwill or ill will, isn't that enough that we have the documents? He's kind of saying, like, he doesn't want to go anywhere near the political, like, aspect of these documents show that there was somebody trying to prevent the release of these reports. The judge is like, yeah, but we got it all now, so let's just focus on that. And you know,
I can kind of get that.
It's supposed to be about the science. Like, I get it, but it's still like, and this is where it's interesting, right?
I mean, it does say, you know, it does say, okay, there was some will, right? Good or ill.
There's
Let's
something
put this
going on
over here and keep doing this case. That's another case, okay? If there's some ill will there, as far as the
Well,
court,
it's for the journalists to report on it. And that, but so this is what Michael Connett argued. This is why I think it matters. So Michael Connett, again, the attorney for the Fluoride Action Network, said, that their case rests on the science surrounding fluoride's toxicity. And he said that the court eventually, the judge, will be faced with, quote, the question of how much weight to give the NTP May 2022 draft assessment. He said that he believes the EPA's strategy is going to be to argue that, well, that's just a draft report. It wasn't ever released, so you shouldn't take that seriously. And it was criticized by internal reviewers, and, you know, it's not credible evidence. And so Michael Conant told the judge, quote, it is our position that this is the report the court has been waiting for 2 years, and the only reason it wasn't released is because of political pressure. Conant said that if they need to understand the lack of scientific merit behind the NTP's decision not to publish the draft report, and it'll help the judge decide how much weight to give the review. So, you know, I do think it's somewhat separate, but also he's right. Like, the government's going to try to argue, don't pay any attention to those documents because they were never released. And we see these scientists, you know, they chose not to release it, even though some the scientists who actually did the study, this document, I don't think I've said this, has been reviewed more than any other NTP document ever in their existence. It's been reviewed over 7 times now, and typically they get a 2 or 3 review process from internal reviewers. But now it's having another review, which is coming up on May 4th. We're going to find out. They created this working group and some bureaucracy we never heard of called the Board of Scientific Counselors within the NTP that is now reviewing the study for like the 8th time.
What if the closing of the American mind and the, you know, the slippery slope of dumberism we keep hearing out in folk culture. Idiocracy, the closing of the American mind. There's so many examples of this. And then just the people on the street, you know, you talk to a guy on the bus and he'll tell you, I don't know what's happening these days. Maybe it isn't a product of bad schools and, you know, poor teachers and careless parents. Yeah.
It could be all the toxins. Right? So, but to get to wrap up that point is just that, so as Conant's bringing this up and say, this is why we need to understand, the judge again said, to me, quote, to me, the science is more important than whether politicians got involved to try to squash the report. That's an exact quote from the judge the other day. So, yeah, what do you think about that, Mike? Because I get where he's going, but it's still like, it's relevant.
It goes back to what I was saying, but I do get the point. But the fact of, like, let's just talk about science for a minute, right? We're going to know scientifically certain things that make products for us, like lights and, you know, computers, and they make us know that at sea level, water will always boil at this temperature. And it gives us, you know, if we could never know things, like know them foundationally like that, we'd be in a sea of never having any principles or any sort of way to cling to anything. So the reason I go into that is, what's the court case over? Mm-hmm. What if the judge is doing better service to the American people by going straight after the fluoride issue and then letting all the political herrings fall to some other judge on whether you want to prosecute that senator or that, you see what I mean? Like, that's what I was trying to explain in the middle.
Well, I
don't know that that's what will happen.
I don't think it's a judge's job, and I get that. Because, like, if there is a judge, right, you would hope, like, if we're going to have a society with judges, in the best case, it's somebody who's wise and understands the law and isn't going to be swayed by emotion and stuff like that. So that could be a good thing, right? And then in an ideal society, okay, the journalists, they write about it.
Or he could just be focused.
The Congress people call for an investigation. Why did this email, you know, and there's the thing, right?
Yeah.
But the judge's job is just to, like, rule on the matter, which his case before him is fluoride toxic? And that's all he's supposed to focus on.
Anything else is a herring. And it gives the judge's brain too much other stuff to have up. It's not what they call judicial efficiency. So he needs to solve that court case. I don't necessarily agree that he as an individual human being will necessarily pay no attention to that. Mm. But I do think he as judge per se, you know, like right now we're radio DJs, right? There's certain words because the FCC we're not going to say. Okay. So I think it's like that at best, you know, maybe he's corrupt too. Who knows? But I do like in a way that it's being focused so that we can get the answer from this case on that issue. And it makes it more interesting to pay attention to because it's sharpened in that way. And now all the other fallout cases and things can become like episodes of it, you know, like that. Maybe, I don't know. If I say a name of a politician and it doesn't happen, I'm sure that I'm guilty of something. So I won't say any authoritarian's name. But with that being said, those are the other cases. So if you were moved by this story, all the stories and sources can be found on the HoustonFreethinkers.com. But if you were moved, continue to follow it. Follow the story. Follow the sidelines that interest you. Reason with it. Do the research. This is what has to happen. You know, everybody's been talking about the media. Both sides think the media is totally controlled as far as the people that are caught in the duopoly. Those of us that are outside the duopoly are like, guess what? You're both right. It is controlled. So the only way to get to know anything is to get to know it. And so anybody that cares, I'm sorry to take that moment, but I think we need to, because that's the big point of this show. And I think it's also a big point of KPFT, right? This is community radio, and this is where you'll hear the ideas and concerns you might not hear elsewhere.
I agree. So one other point I want to make on that is if you want to support KPFT, go to kpft.org and you can let them know you're making a donation for community radio in the name of Live Free, Think Free with Micah and Derek. And I just want to give it a little bit of a local connection, this fluoride story, which if you're in the United States, and I think that most of Europe doesn't fluoridate the water. It's just in the salt. Mexico, it's in the salt. But if you're in the United States anywhere and hearing this, then that story, the last one on water fluoridation, that affects you, because if that lawsuit is successful next February going into March, it could be the end of water fluoridation. It's likely going to open up class action lawsuits, but it could also be dragged out in the courts for numerous more years, unfortunately. But I do want to
maybe bring that's why it's not out in the open, you know, because all the lawsuits that because you're stupid now.
Well, imagine that. Seriously, if a judge does rule and say, hey, yes, we found fluoride to be a toxin. This at this whatever he says. Well, then the CDC, the ADA, the FDA, and all the organizations that have been promoting fluoride for 70, 80 years. Every local dentist who's been putting it. Parents could say my kids might be dumber because of this. You know, maybe it could be the kidney problem because there's so many different.
If I'm dumber, effects. It's because of it, I think.
So my point is, I definitely think they are afraid that it would open up class action lawsuits. But I want to point out this.
Well, what happened? And this isn't for today's. Episode, obviously. I think what we need to do is have researched what happened in the cases of DDT, what happened in the cases of other things that were legal and then went away. But we got to get further than just legal, because certain things weren't illegal. Like in the 60s, certain things weren't illegal and then they became illegal. Here, it's like it was not just legal, but propagated by government.
Yeah, and I want to make the point, though, that to bring this back to the local and for those in Houston and everybody listening on KPFT, is that this has been going on. So I found this isn't the original case, but there's appeals related to this case. You look up Safe Water Foundation and et al. There's other plaintiffs versus the city of Houston. And I believe it started in 1980. And this lawsuit is one of the appeals that I found online from September 1983. And so just some of the background, it says here on the appeal, it says this is an appeal from a judgment denying the appellant's petition for a permanent injunction to prohibit the city of Houston from injecting fluoride into its water supply. The city council in Houston held public hearings at which it received views of interested citizens concerning the issue of injecting fluoride into the city's surface water. On July 8, 1980, the Houston City Council passed ordinance number 80-2530, adopting the recommendation by Dr. James Watson, director of the City of Houston Health Department, that fluoride in a concentration of one part per million be added to the city's water supply. The appellants filed suit seeking an injunction to permanently enjoin the city from injecting fluoride into its drinking water. They were granted a temporary restraining order until a hearing could be heard. So it goes on. It's just giving the history. But my point is,
how much do they put in now? Is it one part per million?
No, it's up to four, I believe. It's gone up.
Times dumber than ones who got it back then.
Well, and this is the other thing too, is that the studies that the NTP reviewed, that report that they didn't want people to see, it specifically says that some of the studies they looked at were below the level that the government recommends, and they found problems below it. So even not even just because, you know, they put higher fluoride exposure, but that doesn't mean like necessarily just because, again, like we said earlier, you got the tap water that you're drinking, you're taking showers in, you're eating processed food and you're cooking with. Hopefully you're not. But if you are, then you got numerous exposures. And this is just interesting, though, just for those sources. There's a history of Houstonians pushing back against water fluoridation going back to the 80s.
Many of your parents out there was trying to fight that fight.
So pretty cool to see that in this city, people have been trying to fight it. And this is something that we've been involved with different ways, like raising awareness on that. We're involved with a group called Fluoride Free Houston. I continue to report on it. And it's annoying because it's one of those topics, Micah, that, you know,
you get
called crazy.
Yeah.
And as a journalist or somebody who tries to be an independent journalist, in certain circles, mainstream circles, you're not seen as credible or respectable if you talk about such things. But the data is there. The science is there. And I'm one of the few people that's following this court case. And, you know, other people have picked it up, thankfully. But there's really no mainstream reporting except for, like, you might find Bloomberg Law or something like that, you know, kind of making a reference to it.
Well, it's good that we have so much available and that we have so many people, you know, that do share these shows and share the ideas, more importantly, because I know from being the age I am that it's a lot easier to spread the information this way. I don't know that it's any easier to get the authoritarians to move.
Well, let's got a couple more stories. And I know they should move out. They should move.
Hey, let's see that DDT is good.
Oh, you sent that?
Yeah, I think that's good. It's over there in private. Yeah, I think it's just like to wrap that whole thing up. We did go on that a little while. We don't normally spend a lot of time there. But check out this little poster from back in the day. This is a advertisement. That's right. This is a real advertisement from back in the day. The great DDT. And how it's good for you. It's good for you. I haven't read it before, but there's some words there. And
DDT is good for me. It's got all the animals.
They're singing. You know, this is from the 40s.
Look, it's got the dog singing. The woman, the cow, and the fruit, and the chickens. Oh, it's good for
all of them. Yeah.
Don't worry if it's in your food or not.
Put it on the wallpaper and stuff, like in children's rooms.
Well, one thing that I'll mention on the fluoride thing, we'll move on. You go back, read the book, The Fluoride Deception. Edward Bernays was involved in the original marketing campaign working with the American Dental Association to do similar things like with smoking, getting women smoking, all that stuff, to get the public, it's the best thing that you need. It's going to help fix your teeth and this and that. But
Edward Bernays.
Yep, father of propaganda. All right, let's go on. I know you got a Seattle fentanyl one.
Yeah, let's get moving. Speaking of poison. So, yeah, it turns out this is interesting on many fronts. We've always talked about the drug war. We talked about the horrible effects of fentanyl. And we've also talked about monitoring devices, shotgun and voice monitoring devices. Now we're going to combine the two. Seattle, it turns out, installs fentanyl detectors on public buses because it's not just because they want to know. It's because the drivers are getting sick from the fumes. Seattle is installing fentanyl detectors. Turns out that they're putting them on the buses and the trams in King County. And it was out from the Seattle Times. Over 50 bus operators filed worker compensation claims. So if you're a bus driver and you haven't got your worker compensation claims and you've been getting the fentanyl, you should check into that. And it turns out that basically for drug and chemical exposure in 2022, and this was from the New York Times, many of the drivers became so sick that they needed to stop driving and seek emergency medical treatment. Think about that. Your bus driver's like, whoa, man, and pulls over and like calls 911 and the ambulance comes.
Because of fentanyl smells? Like, is that strong or something?
Yeah, that's what they're saying. The city is installing the detectors. University of Washington study, whose researchers are hoping to better understand drugs that are being smoked on the buses and trains. I'm not sure, you know, I mean, universities study everything, but I don't know why they singled out the buses and trains. So interesting. Symptoms of fentanyl exposure, just in case you've been having this and wondering, include dizziness and breathing difficulties. If randomly you're getting it, there might be someone in the next room like smoking some fentanyl. It's crazy. Well, officials from the Washington Poison Center downplayed the risk of secondhand fentanyl exposure. You know, I guess that might be good. Local transit union President Kenneth Price noted to the Times that if the drug is dangerous enough to kill its users, and it is likely potent enough to hurt those who are nearby. Typically, people smoke a fentanyl pill. I don't want to give them instructions. you know. But anyway, they smoke a fentanyl pill. I'll just say that. And it turns out that they say it smells like engine oil mixed with peanut butter. So if you smell that and you've been getting dizzy, headaches and stuff, you might check like what Johnny's doing. Seattle's detectors will monitor public, and they're not stopping at fentanyl. Will monitor public transit air for heroin, methamphetamines, and oxycodone.
It just seems like that's going to end up bad. You know what I mean? Like, it's one of those things that maybe has a positive purpose, but they're putting in detectors for one thing, and who the heck knows where that goes, right?
Yeah, you get used to them, and, you know, you get used to them and all that stuff. But I also just now thought of, like, is Seattle one of those cities that has, like, a safe zone for addicts?
I don't know. I don't know what their policies are. I know that they're pretty liberal, I guess you could say, on some of these things.
Man, I don't know. I don't know. I got weird feelings about that. I mean, I don't know. You know, because why would the government want to, whatever. But yeah. So that's what's going on over in Seattle. If you ride the bus and you see something funny, take a picture of it and send it to us. We'd love to see what the fentanyl detectors look like. Got this other one that's really probably interesting to hit. Maybe it seems like a bit removed from our time, but yeah, it turns out that senators voted 66-30 to repeal the 2002. And I guess my main thinking was, look how slow they are. Senators voted 66-30 to repeal the 2002 measure and also the 1991 authorization that sanctioned the U.S.-led Gulf War.
Wow, that freaking long.
Yeah, it hurts my heart. If passed by
the House, 40 years?
I'd hate to say, but yeah. Yeah, 42 years.
Wow. So go on. I mean, it's just so this. I thought it was for the 32
years.
It was for the Iraq War.
32 years.
Oh, 32. So you're saying
it's still a long time, over three decades. It's both from the 2002, they voted in the majority to repeal the 2002 measure and the 91 measure. So they were like, this ain't enough. We're going further back. So you just think from the beginning of this sentence, it's power grab from the current state of affairs. Now, you got Constitution on one side, and you got what they're really doing on the other, right? I mean, we all got to see that, right? I mean, I think Grandpa saw that. But yeah, senators voted 66-30 to repeal these two things. If nothing else, it's a power grab by the Congress, which might be good for the people. If passed by the House, the repeal will not be expected to affect any current military deployments. But lawmakers in both parties are increasingly seeking to claw back congressional powers they have given the White House over U.S. military strikes and deployments. And some lawmakers who voted for the Iraq War two decades ago now say it was a mistake.
No.
They're catching on now. Now they've already been paid and it's over, you know. Senator Robert Menendez.
People are dead.
Yeah, people are dead. Thousands and tens of thousands. And God knows what else, you know, over there. Noted it would be the first time in more than 50 years that Congress would repeal a war powers vote. This is something we've talked about numerous times on here since the Gulf of Tonkin resolution and the authorized military force in Vietnam was repealed in the early 70s. So you see, all these undeclared wars were given an authorization of force. We've said it numerous times. This way they can vote to support the troops, but not be accused of creating the war and get voted out of office. It's a little game they play. The politicians, they play it on you, okay? So
it's a long time.
If you look at the Constitution and you even want to start with what they said it might should be and how we're supposed to be able to change it, I'll just advance that book for that reason, because you can use it to argue in all kinds of ways. But then also, that book doesn't give the president the power to take us to war. It gives Congress the power. And so rather than dealing with their responsibility or, you know, their obligation, they've just kind of outsourced it to the White House. Here, take it, and deluded you in thinking you have this contract with them, the Constitution, and they say in here they're doing that, but they're not. So that's back to that thing. But they're so slow, they're just now catching on. But whatever. The Iraq War ended years ago, and repeal would not be expected to affect, we said that, and right now about 2,500 U.S. troops remain in Iraq at the invitation of Iraqi government. Who put that government there? And to advise local forces. So That's
it's crazy, man. But I think it's important to note, because we follow the we follow the geopolitical scene, the ongoing wars, the regime change wars, the never-ending wars, and we've been following them. And I know that you have a history just in general with them, and so it's something that's important to note. Because, like you said, how many people really even think about that? And even like just a couple weeks ago or a week ago, they ended the COVID emergency after 3 years, right? So it's like they do these emergencies, even on the local level, and they can go on for decades. And what does that mean? What powers do they get because it's an emergency? And
well, that stuff being in the background there, like maybe not as old as the 91 one, but the 2002 one, that's the justification that Trump used to drone strike that general over there, Iranian General Qasem Soleimani.
Based on the old authorization.
Yeah. So, that's the thing. When your pet tyrant puts in things, you're the anti to your pet is going to use them still and then laugh about it. And guess what? Yeah. So I don't know. It's a lot going on. And they talk in the article here about a lot of the history of how these bills have been used. And but they do say that they've learned a lot of lessons over the last 20 years. And God, I'd hope so. I don't like some of the senators that are saying some stuff about it. But, I do think that it's probably better to have more people involved in making a decision about whether we really go to war with someone versus just the autocrat.
Yeah. Well, more voices hopefully are better.
You might be able to reach your senator easier.
We're going to wrap up here. It's been good to be back after being off for about 5 weeks. And I do apologize for the beginning of the show for those who had some audio issues, but we're here. We're excited and glad to be back talking with you guys. You can find our website, thehoustonfreethinkers.com. That's where the archive of this show will be, including all the links that we went over. So check that out. And if you're on Spotify, all those platforms, you can search Live Free, Think Free. Find us there. We are also, again, on KPFT, kpft.org. You can check out Houston Local Radio, Community Radio. If you feel like making an investment in the only community radio station left in Houston, and let them know that Live Free, Think Free sent you, we graciously appreciate that. And that allows shows like ours to continue and independent media to continue broadcasting outside of the big corporations. So thank you guys so much for
joining
us.
Yeah, we do reach a lot of people on FM that we probably wouldn't reach otherwise. I know that we have a bit of an audience from the decades we've done this show online, also from the years of activism and the various works that Derek and I do outside the show. But on the FM radio, we're definitely able to reach people just driving in their car. And it's weird because you think it's really an old, outdated form of communication. And I would also say that we've been given more freedom than Derek had on YouTube. We are given more freedom than we're given online. And it kind of baffles our mind because we didn't expect that at all. And we, so thank you, KPFT.
Thank you, KPFT.
All the listeners tonight here online. I really enjoyed seeing the numbers. It's been a while. I've enjoyed the comments. Believe it or not, from the first episode of Freethinker Radio, the comments were my favorite part because we respond to them. We get into them. We talk about them. We post them up now that we do the video. And it makes this conversation, even if we tend to have the microphones, much more of an involved, a dialogue. So thank you for those who contributed in that way. And we hope to see you next week.
All right. Thank you guys again. Find us at thehoustonfreethinkers.com. We're going to close out with one of my songs, 33 Inner Space. You can find out my music at 33ishere.com. See you next week. Peace.
Check 1, 2. Transmutation 33. Welcome to my world.
Come on this journey inside my mind. I promise you will see to the top we climb. Got better things to do, big things on the way. Just gotta make it through the struggles of every day. Come on this journey inside my mind. I promise you will see to the top we climb. Got better things to do, big things on the way. Just gotta make it through the struggles of every day.
I'm on top of the world and I can see it all from here. There's nothing I can't do, so I let go of the fear. Come climb inside while we traverse the stars. I promise we ain't lost, man, we're headed to Mars. But this ain't out of space, yo, this is the inside. The place in your mind where your fears reside. This is the inner journey you've been waiting on. All the healing and growth you've been skating on. Thin ice is no place for those heavy shoulders. We all feel the struggle, but keep fighting like soldiers. Buying flashy cars, trying to master battle scars. You can keep on running, man, but you ain't gonna get far. Come on, this journey inside my mind. I promise you will see to the top we climb. Got better things to do, big things on the way. Just gotta make it through the struggles of every day. Come on, this journey inside my mind. I promise you will see to the top we climb. Got better things to do, big things on the way. Just gotta make it through the struggles of every day. Try to outrun myself, but I'm everywhere I go. I can't escape, feels like failure's all I know. Meanwhile, mentally, I'm all over the place. They say bipolar, it's written all over my face. I'm one bad day away from losing my mind. But even if I survive, it's the same every time. I'm only getting out of bed on the slim chance that I might make it. I might go the distance to see what lies out on the edge. The place most dare not even tread. Cause living close to death is my only comfort. I'm still fighting, still trying to find self-worth. Come on, this journey inside my mind. I promise you will see to the top we climb. Got better things to do, big things on the way. Just gotta make it through the struggles of every day. Come on, this journey inside my mind. I promise you will see to the top we climb. Got better things to do, big things on the way. Just gotta make it through the struggles of every day. Most days I can't complain, stay high to numb the pain. When the party dies down, the nightmares return, I drown. In a pool of my mistakes, in my own self-hate, I can't escape. I can't even put food on my plate, maybe you can't relate. I pop pills to kill what I have done. It's nothing new under the sun, just enough to consider the gun. I can't stop running, ain't nowhere to run. You know the feeling, there's someone better. I promise I'm fine, but never say never. Cause tomorrow ain't coming to those who don't live. Don't doubt yourself, your gift is yours to give. Come on this journey inside my mind. I promise you will see to the top we climb. Got better things to do, big things on the way. Just gotta make it through the struggles of every day. Come on this journey inside my mind. I promise you will see to the top we climb. Got better things to do, big things on the way. Just gotta make it